boys and girls and moms and dads and children of all ages. An upgraded, up, cleaned up, reversionized radio fishing coming back at you. And it kind of got off track there a little while. Now, what we're going to be getting into today is a big question on everybody's mind, the bait. And we're going to do some shark, catfish, and stingray stuff. Tomorrow's the big tournament. People are signing up today. Big day. And this is Fish and Frank. And in the chair across from me is Captain Kale.
The none other.
And so, let's get that going. Okay, see ya. All right. So, anyway, what's the deal with the bait up right now?
Well, we went out fishing for shark bait yesterday. Went out with Captain Tim Johnson of T-Back Charters.
Gotcha.
Kind of twofold. Get out there and look for some shark bait and to try out his new rods that we're going to be carrying here soon. Trying to look for jacks.
Jacks are tough right now.
No, jacks are tough when you're looking for them.
Right. When you're not looking for them, they blow up
when
everywhere.
You don't want them.
Yes.
So it was tough fishing for the jacks. You know how they are. They've got two speeds, fast and disappear. So
that's a good way of putting it.
We went up into the PGI canals. That's usually a good place to find jacks. They press those glass minnows up against the canals, and you'll see them boiling.
Tremendous
for miles
hive
down the
mentality on those.
Yeah.
It's surprising, but how well the fish work together to accomplish the goal.
Yeah, it's not like Spanish mackerel, who will school up and steal food from each other. The jacks work together to corral the fish and go after the fish. You don't see them.
Yeah, they all get together at the mouth of a canal, and then they start working down the side, and they just pick one side of the canal, and everything's about pushing the bait in front of them and keep it hurting, getting it more and more excited.
And it's hard to fish them like that because you can't keep up with them in the canals.
No, they're moving 10, 15, I'd say 10 miles an hour.
Your trolling motor won't keep up with them, and it's no wake inside the canal, so you can't chase them down. Yesterday, the problem that we had is you'd get one cast into them and they'd disappear. Gone. We found one school boil up at the mouth of the Colony Bridge, another school further into PGI, and one cast and you were done. They disappeared.
Well, maybe that hive mentality. Maybe they're telling everybody, Captain Kale's here, run!
Yeah.
Run!
The shark tournament's tomorrow. We're not safe.
Yes. So.
But, then we went into the Myakka Cutoff and a couple other places to look for jacks, and that's when I started throwing one of Tim's new rods. The new technology with the rod eyes, the placement, and that new microwave guide system is absolutely unbelievable.
Done right.
Yeah,
I've
done right.
I've had many people trying to sell me those rods, and the problem with the microwave guides is unless it's done really correctly, and the other thing about it is you need to put a higher end reel on it. You don't want to use, because you need a good cross-wrapping reel.
Yes.
If it doesn't have a good cross-wrap system, in other words, the spool come out one speed and come back as different of a speed as possible, either faster or slower, but you've got to get that line cross-wrapped on there, and then using a little bit smaller reel. These are not rods you want to put 4,000, 5,000 series reels on. You want to use them
good, strong,
the 25, 3,000s, and done right, and Tim seems to actually have gotten it right, because it's really easy to mess those rods up. The guides look great, they work great, but without the correct spacing between the reel and the first guide, without the correct angle, everything has to be amazingly accurate, because just buying a guide with microwaves, you're going to cast not as far as you will with a standard rod. You're going to have more wind tangles, more knots, more problems. You got to match the rod, got to match the reel, and the guides have to be placed correctly in the first place.
Yep. I would have to say that the only problem that I had with this rod was getting used to it. You're picking up a normal 7-foot rod, throwing, say, a 17MR, and when you put it on one of those rods, you don't expect that big of a difference.
You don't expect it to fly that much farther.
Yes, and the first hour was expensive. Because you're throwing lures, and it's not, okay, let's just go into the trees and get that. It's, let's go back around the other side of that island and get that lure.
Right.
And I'm not exaggerating. That's the bad part. I mean,
my first time
just
ever throwing long cast rods, when long cast guides first came out back in the 1980s, and it took 10, 15 years for people to start catching on, and even now, 30 years later, people are just still recognizing the difference in the guide patterns on the rod that actually makes a rod cast better or worse. And so I remember what it was like my first time, and you know, I was fishing in a canal, and to be quite honest, it was in the, you know, on the dock or across the yard up in the person's hedges. Instead of being snagged on the dock, I was literally snagging in the bushes next to somebody's house.
You wouldn't think calming that line down would make that big of a deal, but
the difference,
the energy
is
transference,
it's not rubbing on the guides, it's going at strike.
Unbelievable. You're directing that energy where it needs to go and not wasting it on line going in a big circle, not slapping against guides and rods, and it makes an incredible difference.
The only thing I will say though is I caution everybody to watch out. The microwave guides thing is kind of like, reminds me of the rods that had the line going through the blank.
Right.
When in those rods, when they were dry, they casted great. As soon as you got them wet, they wouldn't throw anything. I mean, they threw half as far as a regular fishing pole. And I have seen microguide rods, and we're not telling you to go out and buy something with a microwave guide because it is easy to mess up. And that's one key thing to remember, is not all new technology is good. It's only good if it's done right.
Right, right.
And obviously, Tim's doing it right.
Yeah, and I had no problems with a wet rod. I mean, we were catching ladyfish, and you know, one of the things that I do with ladyfish is stick that rod tip right down into the water and keep that fish from jumping, and next cast, no problem. It is done right.
That's what I say. It's all about getting it right. And the only reason I caution people is because a lot of times things come out and, oh, this works so great, but it's not always true. And you really have to pick and choose on the new technology until people catch up to it. Because what a lot of manufacturers have done is put those new guides on their old layouts.
Right, right.
Not good.
No.
Not good at all. And, you know, finding somebody like Tim's rods, the Reaper rods, there's really... got to give give him credit, because I was definitely not sold on the microwave guides until Tim brought those out.
Yeah, they work phenomenally well.
Yeah, he's definitely leading the industry right now, because I get people every once a week, every 2 weeks, somebody comes in here and they want me to buy these rods. They sell for $200 and some, and they got this and they got that, and they're just not that different.
No, it's a fishing rod.
And
there's only so many things that you can do.
Yeah,
there really is.
You know, what I did was I went back to the original designs on our rods to one of the hybrid systems, and it throws with any reel.
Yep.
Cheap ones, good ones, very expensive, very inexpensive, and it doesn't throw knots. Whether you're using a 2500 or a 4000 or whatever, it's the big problem was finding a guide system that would accept all that different ones.
Right.
And that's another problem with rods right now, is finding which one is the one that works with your reel.
Yeah, and people don't realize that. I mean,
we replace rods for people all the time, because they go out, they throw it, you know, half a day into it, they're throwing knots all day.
Right.
Well,
right.
Swap out the rod, swap out the reel. Maybe it's the line. There's so many things can go sideways when you're buying a new rod and reel.
Yeah.
And I've had some guys, it's taken me 3-4 different combinations to get that one form that really works. The right line, the right reel, the right rod, and they throw all day with no problems.
That distance between your reel and that first rod eye can be key.
Oh, yeah.
The size of that first rod eye can be key. So you do
absolutely.
You do have to play.
You really got to work at it. And one of the things we've spent a lot of time with over the last few years is trying to find it. Then the final key factor on it all is the person's wrist, how they throw that rod.
It always comes down to the loose screw behind the handle.
Yeah, I mean, if they're whipping it at a cast, if they lob it when they cast, they sire them, you know, your style of casting will create different problems than the guy standing next to you.
Some of these new braids are so sensitive that whether you reel your rod to close your bale, or close your bale by hand can make a difference. Absolutely. In the amount of wind knots that you throw.
And some people are Power Pro people, some people are Finns, some people are Berkley.
Yep.
I mean, we've got people that can throw spider wire all day, and first time they take Power Pro out, they knot up with it.
Right.
And it's
right.
Vice versa. Sometimes the opposite will happen.
Yep.
So not only are we working with the rod and reel, nowadays you have to work with which line is going to be your
best
line.
Remember the good old days where you just put mono on it and it worked?
It worked pretty good, yeah. And I still recommend everybody should have a rod, open water, flats fishing, 8 to 10-pound mono on it, 6, 8, or 10-pound mono, and use your 25-pound test fluorocarbon leader, because when that water's clear, throw mono. You're going to catch more fish.
Yeah, I sit here next to you and nod my head, yes, but I don't have a single small reel with mono on it.
But open water, when those redfish are out in the middle of the flats, in the potholes and stuff, yep. Throwing braid will lessen the amount of fish you hook up.
Absolutely. It's a solid object in the water, no matter what the manufacturer says. And,
you know, the closest invisible one would be Invisibraid with their, you know, polar bear hair stuff.
Yeah, it's a translucent line.
But it's still visible. I have seen pink do way better than the white. I've seen green.
Polar bears aren't endangered because we can't see them and can't count them.
Right.
So it is still visible stuff.
Yes. It all falls down to, you know, what you're doing, what's the best stuff for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, we've talked a lot about everything. The problem is people say, what's the best rod and reel for me? Well, I can tell you the best actions that I like or that you like, but we spend a lot of time trying to find out what's the most comfortable for the person. Because some people like a heavier rod, tighter action, lighter action. But the basic rule is smaller fish, smaller rods, bigger fish, bigger rods.
Sure.
And if you're going to throw lures, spend the extra money and get an ultralight. Get like Tim's Reaper rod. Get the Star Seagis, the Quantum Smoke. There is so many. I mean, St. Croix's got a nice rod out.
That was one of the big things that I noticed out there. We're throwing artificials all day. Cast, 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 cast. And I could cast a lot longer and not rest my hands with Tim's rod than I could with mine.
Right.
I mean, now my rods were just, you know, a normal everyday rod, normal everyday reel.
Now, the rods we designed were designed for people who throw bait. Right. With a little bit of lures. That's your average guy.
Sure.
Now, the one Tim's selling, this is another rod that's lightweight, all really nice actions, but if you're going to throw lures all day, this is a rod to go with because it doesn't weigh anything. And it
doesn't weigh anything, and it's also a thinner handle. And most people, I mean, he wraps the handle. It's not the usual cork or the foam like you see on...
Looks like a golf club.
It looks like a golf club wrap. And while it kind of feels funny in your hand after, you know, at first, it was really...
Hard to get used to. Just like with a split butt. It was really hard to get used to some of the new handles.
The thing that I noticed is, you know, I have to stop and rest when I'm throwing artificials because my hands start burning from the carpal tunnel. And I could sit out there 3 to 4 times longer with one of his rods without my arms and wrist burning.
You know, for those of you who don't know, Camp Kale was a computer guy. He did networking and internet and computer logistics, and all he did was computers from the time he got out of the Marines until he just...
You know, construction work before, driving vehicles in the Marine Corps, computer. I've done everything in life that will cause carpal tunnel. And it's gotten so bad that the carpal tunnel's starting to affect my knees. Because I'm bending over to pick everything up.
So I was wondering, where the heck are you going with this? All right, my carpal tunnel, my problem with my wrist is affecting my knees.
Yep. So it really helped me out there casting all day long. I mean, it took a lot longer for the old hands to start burning.
All right, but let's get down to some fishing here. We were talking a lot about rods. We didn't really say much about it, except that it's really hard to pick your right rod and make sure you got somebody who will exchange it for you, because you might get that perfect rod the first time. It might take 2 or 3 to get one.
Sure.
Now, going on, let's start with catfish. Sailcat is a hotly contested item, and
for one day a year
this is the king of fish.
I'm sorry, I'm in your boat. Catfish get a bad rap. our sale cats get a real bad rap. It's hard to find any other fish in our water that is willing to eat at any given time, and puts
all
up
day,
as much fight as
any other fish or better of its same size.
Yeah.
There's, if you took pound for pound, inch for inch, put a sail cat against almost anything else, it's pretty much as good a fighter, better than many.
Absolutely.
And it's, now granted, it is the slimiest, nastiest, snottiest fish you're ever going to run across.
Yep.
And the difference between a sail cat and a hardhead catfish is two basic things. One is the sail cat has very elongated fins. Where you have the normal fin, then you have a long extension off of it.
Right.
That's why they call it a gaff top sail cat, because it's got that long extension.
And if you actually take the time and look at them, they're a beautiful fish.
Oh, they got great colors on them.
Yeah, beautiful bluish gray. You see them coming through the water with those streamers off of their fins. They're really a beautiful fish.
You know, but then you get them up the end of the line, everything's covered in slime, and snot, and it's just nasty. I mean, it really is. It's nasty. And if you like eating sail cats, dedicate a cooler to the sail cats. You know, you put ice in there, and you throw them in there. And
burn it when you're done.
it's nasty. I mean, you pressure wash it out and bleach, and then get ready for the next trip.
But at least for one day
easy
a year,
to fillet.
They're worth money.
Yeah, they're easy to fillet, too.
Oh, I mean,
leave the head
are.
And ribs intact, just fillet the tail.
Start behind the ribs and fillet start it. There instead of behind the gills, and you're fine.
Yeah, do not fillet the ribs in a sail cat. There's absolutely no meat there. None whatsoever. So start after, just fillet the tail. Make sure you take the meat off the skin. Do not cook it with the skin on. It won't hurt you, but it adds a nasty thing
to the
taste.
And right now, they're found from way up the Peace River to miles offshore.
And they're readily available, but now you got to find a big one.
Now you got to find a big one. And there's,
and
believe it or
this
not,
this fish is going to be worth
them.
Probably, I would say, guessing about $1,000.
Yeah, I would say from what we've got signed up so far and
it's
what
looking
will happen
like
tomorrow,
$1,000. If it blows up a little bit bigger, it can go more than that. But I'm going to guess about $1,000.
Yep, I'm right there with you.
So,
not every day you get to catch a $1,000 sail cat.
No. Now, if you look, we did on Facebook a photo history, and if you go on our website and click the photo history button, you can see a lot of old tournament pictures. Tournament started back in 1985, and it was the summertime of 1985. It was made to go out and just have fun with.
Yep.
So, but I think a lot of the people are, we've had a lot of people that have just moved here. And a lot of the old people have come and gone, and you know, it was always just something fun to do. It was you spent your $30 just to go out and have a great time on the water with your buddies.
And it still is that. It is a fun tournament because, number one, it's cheap and easy to get into. It's not a $300 entrance fee like these redfish tournaments. It's $30. Anybody can get into it.
You can go by yourself.
You can fish from it from land. You can fish from it from a boat.
Yeah,
you can take a group of friends. You can fish by yourself.
If you take a group of friends, they have to be in the tournament.
Right.
Each person pays $30. It's an individual tournament. Now, if you've got a few people in a boat, you can share your fish back and forth. That's fine. We don't.
Yep.
There's no issues with that. We've had a few people that won in the sailcat, shark, and stingray division.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yeah, you can go out there and place in each one. You can catch a stingray.
We've never
shark.
Had anybody win first, and first, but we've had a first, a second, and a third, or
well,
first,
we're
second,
try
and fourth,
change that
and
this
stuff
year.
Like that.
We're going to try and change that this year.
Well, this is the only year. This is
the last year.
This is it. So, you know. And nothing ever works in a tournament. You're going to go out there fishing for catfish. And even if you're on a pier, great idea to chum.
Yes.
Get that chum in the water and start. Because when the sail cats, they will come to chum very readily.
Ask any charter captain who chums up the flats for white bait how well catfish respond to chum.
Oh, yeah. And
because I've had to dig dozens out of the cast net.
And the big thing is you, what you want to do is get your chum going and get your baits out there.
Yep.
And mix and match the size of the baits from small up to huge. And
absolutely.
By huge, I mean the size of your fist or bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, a good size bait waiting for that one big catfish. But I don't want to eliminate the bite from a I'm going to go through a bunch of smaller ones, hoping a big one will pick it up.
Right.
And then I've got one big chunk of bait, only a monster catfish going to get in his mouth.
Yes.
And wait for it to run. because the little ones will push it around 2-3 feet here, 2-3 feet there, trying to get in their mouth, and they won't be able to.
Yeah. They are such aggressive feeders. I have sat at the 41 bridge and watched the catfish push the tarpon out from underneath the bridge.
Oh, and they get
this is
the
a 2-pound fish pushing a 200-pound fish out of its territory.
Mm.
They will come in a humongous school in a big wave and just push all those tarpon 6 feet off the bridge, and they won't come back underneath it.
I have actually sat there, and I can tell you, reeling in a shark bait, watching a school of catfish slice
chase
at it,
yeah.
chase at it, fight for it, and follow it right up to the boat. And if they got 4 feet long, I'd never go in the water.
I mean,
ever. But they don't.
Troll a live pinfish through our canals and watch what eats it.
Yeah.
90% of the time, it'll be a sail cat. Yeah. They are very aggressive.
So, anyway, the sail cat, you're going to go out to the pier. If you're going to fish one of the piers, Aljamina would be a good spot. Placida's probably better. Lashley, Bayshore would be pretty good. I'm not sure you're going to do as well, but you got to get that chum going. And you got it. Once you start chumming, you're kind of committing yourself. You're going to want to be there for an hour once you start chumming. You can't chum and then expect the fish to automatically show up.
No.
Most of the
no.
time, I figure 45 minutes before the fish are even going to start to bite.
Yeah.
So, you know, get the chum going, get it working. I'm going to call Placida for best bat out there or right off Stump Pass. But
for the big boys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And get out there, and I'm going to take a box of sardines. I'm going to take some big mullet and some shrimp. And I'm going to have 2-3 rods out, a smaller one and a bigger one, maybe a middle size, but no more. If you got 10 rods out, you're going to lose the tournament. You're never going to get that fish. It's never going to happen.
Definitely.
You need to be with your rods.
The nice thing about fishing in those areas is you also have a chance of the big stingrays and shark coming through there also.
Right. So, you know, and that big bait will land other ones. The only problem is getting them up on the pier.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's tough.
But stingrays, we started out a shark tournament because the catfish eat the same bait as the sharks.
Right.
And the stingrays eat the same bait as the sharks. But the hotly contested part is where are we going to get that catfish from? That's going to be huge. What's your game plan? I know you're planning on going out in the tournament. I'm not going to ask you where, but more or less a game plan.
I'm more than happy. I am going to start upriver.
Mm-hmm.
And I am starting upriver for shark.
Okay, I know there's a bunch of sharks, but I didn't know there would be tournament-sized sharks.
I don't know either.
Okay.
But the one thing that I have noticed out here is if you're sitting there catching small sharks,
right,
big sharks come. Eventually, big sharks come.
That is true.
And if there are small sharks upriver, there's big sharks upriver.
There's a lot of small sharks around the Harbor Heights area.
And
all the way down to I-75.
Yeah, the bull sharks are known for going into fresh water.
Oh, they've got them in Illinois.
Yeah, and a large bull shark can live longer in salt water than a small bull shark can.
Right.
They have a special gland in their body that secretes salt, so mm-hmm. they can survive in fresh water. And the larger bulls can survive longer. So
yeah, like I said, they've actually caught bull sharks in the Mississippi River as far north as Illinois.
You know, I've caught bull sharks at the San Susi Trestle.
Right.
I've caught bull sharks all the way up to Shell Creek.
Gotcha.
You know, and I've caught black tips up there too that were dying on the vine. Their skin was sloughing off. If you touched them, their skin would peel off.
That's been a fish that's been there too long.
Yeah.
You would leave.
Sometimes that will to eat will bypass everything else.
Stubborn.
Yeah.
Yes. So, anyway, so you're going to start up river, and
I'm going to start up river and probably make my way out the harbor. I will probably...
So, once you set up, how long are you going to be in a spot?
I will usually kind of get the feel for the spot. If I start catching a bunch of small sharks, I will probably stick around there a little longer.
Okay, but how long do you give it? You pull up, you drop your anchor, you drop your chum.
And that's what I'm saying. If I start catching small sharks off the bat, I may stay there and see if anything big comes in. If nothing big comes in.
But is that a half hour, hour?
I usually gauge by the chum block. If I start catching small sharks on the first chum block, I will usually stay through to the second chum block to see if any big ones come in. Hours, minutes don't matter. Chum does.
Okay, so basically, I'm going to say it's about to waste out a half a bag of chum is about a half an hour to an hour.
The box chum that I use and the what I use for a trap is you usually get in the fine ground chum about half an hour, 20 minutes to half an hour.
Okay, so the normal we're on the chum. Same thing. Yeah. About a half hour, hour in a spot. If I don't get and if it's not
anything,
good,
if I don't get anything in the first chum block, I'm gone.
Right. So half hour to an hour in a spot, yeah. And if you're not hitting anything, move on. Yeah. Now, if I was down off Bull Bay, Cape Hayes, somewhere like that, I'm not sure I'm going to move. I might go an hour,
yeah, down
hour
there,
and a half.
Down there, I'll stay longer.
Hour and a half because to maybe 2 hours in a spot and yeah. Then maybe either slide out. I'd stay very close to what I was. Like, say I'm fishing in 8 feet of water. After an hour, I don't get a bite. I'm going to slide up to 6 feet of water at an idle. And leave my chum bag in the water and kind of try continuing chumming, but
yeah,
just moving up a couple of feet.
I think with me, it depends on the time of day. If it's in that 5 to 10 o'clock zone, yes, I'll probably move shallow. If it's middle of the day, middle of the night, I may move out deeper instead.
Right, because they're going to go shallow from 5 to 10, and then they're going to go back out deeper again.
Yep.
But they've just fed, so
yep.
I usually figure 10, 10:30. I'm going for sail cats. I want to go find a good sail cat spot. I want to try and make my money on that.
Yep.
Get a stingray, get a sail cat. They'll bite all night long.
Yeah.
They're not that particular. But the sharks have that feed pattern.
Yeah.
And once they're done feeding, they're kind of done. You get that every once in a while, that Hail Mary shot.
Yep.
But then I'm going to go back and really get serious about the sharks again by about 3 o'clock in the morning.
And that's kind of what my game plan is. Work upriver for that 5 to 10 o'clock period and see if we can pull a big one out. If nothing happens, we start working our way towards Boca Grande slowly but surely.
Right.
I will probably hit the 41 bridge for catfish. I will probably stop at the...
I'd go Colony Point.
Oh, yeah. You're going to stop at Colony. It's on the way. The next stop is probably going to be the Alligator Creek Reef and set up there for catfish and big stingray. I will probably move out to one of the deeper holes. And that'll probably be around midnight to 4 o'clock
Ace
in the morning.
Ace Hardware's got a cool hammock. It's a self-contained hammock. And I was looking at it yesterday. I was at Ace yesterday looking at it. And about $60 on sale right now. That would be sweet on the boat because you're not laying on the boat itself. Now, I know you have a different idea, and that's great. But I was looking at that hammock thinking, man, that would just rock. It'd keep me up off the deck. You know, hammocks are comfortable anyway.
Yeah.
And I was looking at that $60 hammock. I thought, boy, if I'm going to spend the night out there, that would rock.
That would. Literally, rock.
Yeah, rock, back and forth.
Rock you right to sleep.
Yeah. Make sure your reels have loud clickers.
Yeah,
on.
Loud clickers.
I'd like one of those European bite alarms go beep, 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 beep when the fish hit. But, you know, your idea is the most inexpensive air mattress you can buy.
Yep. Cheap air mattress, blow it up in the front of the boat, set it down there. I got a big square boat. Let's make use of it.
Right.
Stick an air mattress down there, blow it up. You can sleep right there in the air mattress.
But the idea that I liked about it was it's all plastic. So
yeah.
At the end of the day, hit it with the hose.
You take it home,
let
you hose
it
off, you wipe it down, and it's good to go.
That would be the only problem with the air mattress is trying to find a cover for it because if you're shark fishing, most of the time you got chum on you. Let's hope you got shark blood, catfish guts, you know, whatever you
everybody's
got all
got
over
a,
you.
Everybody's got an old sheet somewhere.
Yeah. You know, but I was just looking at them. I was going to lay down in it, and I didn't. I said, no, if I do it, I'm going to spend the $60, and I don't,
yeah,
I don't
exactly.
You know. And I'm not going to be fishing the tournament because I got to be bright and awake in the morning to measure sharks and
yep.
Make sure I take care of all the stuff that goes on, right or wrong, how we're going to do it. But, you know, one of those things. But now,
yeah.
We did the catfish, and you're working your way out towards Boca with the reef,
yep.
The middle hole, probably.
Yeah, once I come across Colony Point, it's pretty much catfish stingray at that point.
Right.
Probably a little more emphasis on stingray
right.
than the catfish. But you'll have a big catfish pick up your stingray bait, so you're still doing the same thing. I like the Alligator Creek Reef for stingray. I have pulled a lot of big stingray off of there. There's been a lot of big stingray sightings in the Turtle Bay, Bull Bay area, too.
Yeah.
Look at that edge. You want the edge of the bar is a good place to be. They're pupping out right now.
Yeah, a lot of stingrays giving birth right now.
They're doing it usually in the edges of our sandbars.
Right.
Those little stingrays can go up into the shallow water where they're relatively safe. if they're pupping out in open water between the sharks, the cobias, the catfish, they're goners. So they're going to try and stay in shallower water. I will try and go out to the deeper water.
Looking for the big ones.
Looking for the big ones. Looking for your big males that have already done their thing, the big females that have already done their thing and are out there sitting like they normally do out in that deep water. And then probably towards, why can't I never remember the name of that sandbar?
Jug Creek?
No. Capes. There it is. Okay. It's the one I always brain fart on Capes for some reason. That's a great place to look for stingray and catfish.
Yeah, but for the smaller ones, going to go shallow. Bigger ones, I'd stay out in 4 to 6.
Yep.
You know, 1 to 3 feet of water is great on those smaller stingrays, but I don't think you're going to find that monster quite up that shallow.
No, but I do want some small stingrays.
Bait.
Yeah, that's shark bait for the morning bite.
And like I've been telling people, your first stingray, that's your entry stingray, whether it's 18 inches wide or 12 inches wide. Your next stingray, the bigger of the two, is your tournament entry. The smaller one goes just back for bait. But keep your entry stingrays. We've had guys that have cut up their stingrays that would have placed.
Would have won.
They would have made money on the stingray, and they used it for shark bait.
Yeah, stingray is the gotcha category in the tournament. And it ebbs and flows. You know, it'll ebb, and you'll only have 3 stingrays show up.
And we do a drawing for the fourth place money. We give away $50 at a time on a drawing.
People remember that next year, hey, only 3 stingrays were brought in, and they pay out 4 places, so everybody keeps a stingray.
Right.
And then it kind of slowly ebbs back down to where there's only 3 out there, and then it comes right back up.
Yeah. But if we don't have 4 entries in a category, we just give the money away. We give it away $50 at a time. We have a drawing at the end, and we give the money away. And it's for the people standing there. If you didn't stand there and wait,
sorry.
It's not like you can turn in a ticket. We're going to call you at home. I call your name. You don't yell out.
And
we go to the next one.
It is hard to stand there. You've been out sweating your butt off
all night.
Playing with chum, playing with stinky fish. You're hot. You're tired. All you want is a shower and to go to bed. But it pays to stick around sometimes.
Yeah, if we were going to keep this going, I'd probably, you know, put a couple of secondary showers up in front of the store. Because some of the guys, just standing next to them is a little tough.
Yeah, but, it's you expect to see the flies gathering around the sharks on the pavement.
Not so much.
Not the fishermen, but it does.
Yeah, it does. It goes both ways. So, anyway, so there's a good rule. But now, if I was leaving and you come down, you pay your money, you do your sign out, and then you're going back. Now, we've got a lot of people from Englewood going to be fishing. And in Englewood, I would be trying for my big stingray just inside a stump pass or right on the outside, 10 feet of water off the beaches.
Yeah.
But I would go out a little deeper for the shark right away.
Definitely. Definitely.
Now I'm going to say I'm wrong about that, because I would get out and get just outside a stump pass.
I would probably
try and get some of those big fish coming up into the flats to feed. That might be the better bet.
I think you're going to find better food at structure. So I'm going to go out there to the closest structure I can find, get a little bit off of it, and chum the snot out of the water and see if you can get a big guy that's hanging around that reef looking for an easy meal.
Right.
Sharks don't like to chase fish down. They want something sick, lame, or lazy, just like every other fish. They want that easy meal.
Like
and
me.
It's easier to find those at a
reef. I don't
go
out and walk through the woods every night with a shotgun looking for a partridge or a snipe or whatever it is, and, you know, then take it home, clean it, cook it for a meal. I want to, you know, go into the store and go, okay, here are my $5. Give me a meal.
Yep. And that shark's going to do the same thing. So you have naturally bigger populations of fish around structures.
I think out in the Gulf, I would use those squid wings that we have, those big from the giant Humboldts we sell.
Absolutely.
It looks like half a stingray.
Yeah.
But it's actually squid.
It's all squid.
And you put that on a big hook and put it out there, because sharks eat a lot of squid.
Yeah, I'm not cutting it up.
When they're in the...
I'm putting it out there whole.
Right.
You know, and that's where learning how a shark bites sometimes pays off, so you can get it out of the mouths of the little guys, because those little guys will sit right there and tear at it and eat that whole thing right off the hook. You want something to come by and take it in one gulp.
Right. That's But I think that squid wing, if I was going to fish off Englewood out in the Gulf.
Squid wing and bonita.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely go for that squid wing.
Yeah, and I'm not. You're not going to see me throwing squid wing and bonita upriver because that's not what they're eating up there.
But out in the Gulf, it is.
But out in the Gulf, it is.
You know, go back fly fishing, match the hatch. If that's what they're eating, go for it.
And that kind of outlines my shark fishing throughout the year. Early in the year, it's squid and bonita. Then we switch to mullet and ladyfish. And then towards the end of the year.
So what phase are we in right now?
We're definitely in the ladyfish and mullet phase now. These fish have been here for a few months. March, April is a great time for bonita and stingray for bait inside the harbor. Then I'm switching over to mullet and stingray and ladyfish. I haven't used much stingray this year.
Yeah, there was so many of them, but, you know, I don't know. I just, I'm the same way. It's a lot of messing around. Now, for a tournament night, I think I would go for it.
Different story.
But for just regular fishing, I'm not big on the whole stingray thing. It's too much work.
It is.
I hate to say I'm getting lazy, but
they're messy.
By the time you know, when I would do stingray, I would always try and have a big piece of like cutting board so that I could cut them on the board, make sure all the insides, the blood, everything went back in the water. Anything I wasn't using for bait, I used as chum.
Yeah.
So, but it's a lot of work, and it's problematic on a small boat.
Yeah, and a lot of people use the whole stingray. I usually don't do that. I want a big stingray, and I'm talking one that's almost big enough for our tournament.
So 30 inches.
Yeah, 30 inches.
24.
Because I'm cutting his wing off.
Right.
And then usually if you cut a stingray wing off a couple inches from his backbone, it's not a whole lot of blood. Most of your stingray's blood is in the center of that guy.
Right.
Cut him right into the center, flop the rest of him back inside your live well. And he will turn that entire live well crimson red.
That's if your live well brings in new water and has a drain. If
it's
an enclosed well, it's
not doing much good. Hang him off the side of the boat.
Got to be recirculating well that, or
you know,
with new water and going through a drain.
And that just helps add to the chum slick.
It does a great job. And you can even, if you don't have a live well that pumps new water in and the water goes out through the drain, you can just hang them on a rope off the back of the boat like you would your chum bag.
Sure,
And it actually works really good. But keep a rod handy or maybe even put a hook in it and set it in the rod holder, very loose drag.
Because
if you're fishing at night, something will come up and grab it.
I've lost chum baskets, metal chum baskets out there that have been bitten off.
Yeah, they just come and bite the whole darn basket, and the whole thing's gone.
Sure.
So, yeah, don't be afraid to, you know, what we're talking about using for chum, actually put a hook into it and have your drag, you know, good pen reel with the reel disengage, clicker on, and just sitting there waiting for it. Because if something comes up, bites it right off the side of the boat, good fish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
going to be a tournament quality fish. You're not going to see little 3-foot black tips coming up to do that. It's going to be something big that's not afraid of you.
Yeah, that's the problem. He's not afraid of me. So, and we've got some new stuff going on with radio fishing. It's getting
well known and getting out there some more.
Well, yeah, it's, something happened this week on it. And I'm looking for it here. Let's see.
Yeah, you guys have been listening to us on the internet, and you're actually going to be able to hear our radio show on the radio.
Yes, in Boston, the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., Charlotte, North Carolina, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Phoenix, Arizona, Birmingham, Alabama, Midland, Odessa, and Amarillo, Texas, Spokane, Washington, Monterey, and Salina, California. And we don't want to, our friends who we're going to be really picking on in Fairbanks, Alaska.
So, yes.
Let's see. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. We're going to be in 14 cities spread across the country.
We're going to make sure that for our Fairbanks, Alaska people that you do get a Florida weather report with every show.
Yes, so we're going to be, we're going to make a lot of friends in Alaska. they're going to hate us. So anyway, anything else we can do here today?
Not that I can think of. We've covered shark and stingray and catfish for our tournament.
So it's $28.04 to get in the tournament, plus tax is $30 per person. You're not allowed to have anybody with you who's not in the tournament. You're not allowed to have help from anybody who's not in the tournament. And whether you're just driving the boat or whatever, that's helping.
Yes.
So, you know, you can't ride along. This is for people who are in the tournament, period. Whether you're on a pier, if you're on the pier, don't accept help from anybody, because chances are they're going to be calling their buddies or putting on Facebook, oh, I just helped so-and-so land a thing, and we're going to be watching.
Yep.
Nowadays, it's easier than ever to figure out what's going on. And I guess...
That's the wonderful thing about Facebook.
Yeah, you've got till...
People are so willing to get themselves in trouble.
So, you can sign up, pay your money now, or you can pay your money tomorrow. You can pay and sign out at the same time, but sign out start at 3:30.
Correct.
And when you pay your money, we write your name down, and we give you a number. And that number is, after that, you're going to sign, your signature has to be after that, or you don't get paid. I don't care what you say, how you're going to say it. Well, I was here, I just forgot. No, if you forgot to sign, you weren't in the tournament.
Right.
Whether you've paid your money or not, no, I'm not giving your money back. These are the rules of the tournament. You have to pay, get your name on the paper, and then sign afterwards.
Considering some of the rule pamphlets that you get from these redfish tournaments, ours are pretty simple.
Yeah.
And for those of you guys that...
From the Skyway, you can fish the Skyway Pier, you can fish Estero Bay, anywhere in between there, west coast of Florida only, and you can fish from land, you can fish from a boat.
And for you guys that work on the weekends, 3:30 isn't the cutoff. You still have until 8 or 9 o'clock
to come in and sign up and sign out.
You can still sign up and still get out there on the tournament. You can't sign up Sunday morning. Don't try that, but you can sign up Saturday till we close.
At, basically about 9 o'clock. If we're busy, we stay open until everybody leaves. Yep. I mean, we've been here till 10, 11 o'clock some Friday nights.
Yep. Come down and do sign up beforehand. There's going to be 300 people here signing up for the tournament Saturday morning. You know, they have to sit in line and pay their money, sign out, and go. If you are signed up early, you get to sign your name and leave. You're giving yourself a good hour advantage over that 300th guy in line.
Well, usually the lines are gone between, it starts at 3:30, by about 4 o'clock, the lines are pretty much done.
Yep.
And then it's kind of sign up and sign out. You're probably in and out of here in a half an hour.
Yep, but that definitely pays to sign up early.
If you sign up early, you can stand in line and be one of the first ones out of here.
Exactly.
So you can get an hour and a half advantage. So anyway, this is Fish and Frank. That's Captain Kale in the chair across from me. And Radio Fishing, and soon to become, I think on the air we're going with the Fish and Frank's Radio Hour, you know, something like that. But Radio Fishing is going to be here on this. So anyway, we appreciate you guys listening, all 16,000 of you people. It's actually pretty cool. There's 16,000 people listening. And you think we would be better for that many people? We really could be. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we'll catch you guys on the next Radio Fishing. We're going to try and give you a little more reports on what's going on. And as the captains come in, we're going to do more shows with them. So thank you much for listening. We'll see you later.